looking at here in the long run is a kind of takeover program, or perhaps even a colonization program, based on these hybrids. This at least is what the aliens tell the abductees, and they told them that with enough frequency and in enough ways for a long enough time that it's gotten me to thinking maybe that's it. And then, you know, it's gotten me to believing what they're saying. And when you look at it that way, then everything seems to fall into place and make sense. It's not a scenario that I particularly enjoy, I must say. I would rather hear something else. But I think most of the evidence is pointing in that direction, as disturbing and perhaps even nutty as that may sound.
Okay, now what about any kind of physical evidence? You mentioned earlier stains, and I think in Secret Life you did mention about some sort of analysis you had done on a stain on someone's nightgown or something like that.
Right.
What other kinds of things, like implants or other physical evidence, do we have that these things are occurring, apart, say, from the scarring or the, you know, scoop?
Right.
Things. What else is there?
Well, first of all, of course, you have to remember that this phenomenon is part of the UFO phenomenon. So we have people seeing UFOs hovering oftentimes over somebody's house and who are in the process of being abducted, and that's really common. So we have independent verification from others just in terms of UFOs over someone's house or whatever. And of course, we have just the anecdotal evidence. We have other people verifying the abductions and everything. But apart from that, what we have are people have said for years that they've been implanted with something, that there's an implant in them, that something's been stuck way up their nose or something's been way in their ears or whatever. And actually, we've been able to retrieve some implants. And now I'm going to use this word in quotes because we're really not sure. But a man named Roger Lear, who's a podiatrist in California, has removed several items from people's feet and hands and so forth, which may or may not be implants.
Does he have these items?
Well, he does, and they're undergoing tests and studies and this and that. But the problem is this, that everything in the universe is made up essentially of the same elements. And when we get these kinds of artifacts, they immediately go into debate. And researchers ask, well, you know, could this implant or this object or whatever it is, could this have been manufactured on Earth, no matter what it is? And since everything in the universe is made up of the same substances, the answer almost invariably is, well, yes, this is made up of aluminum or sodium or chlorine or whatever it is. You know, it's going to be the same elements.
Yeah, aluminum from Alpha Centauri is going to be no different than Earth aluminum, correct?
That's right, exactly. And the problem is that we can't tell function of these implants, and unless you can demonstrate function, this implant attaches to a nerve and sends electrical impulses up this neural pathway to do X, and we are looking at something that we couldn't even conceive of, and yet it does it. Unless you can tell function, you really are just going to have kind of an unusual collection of these elements, even if they're hard or soft or whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. And what happens is the implants, the artifacts, they go in support of the anecdotal evidence and not vice versa. Everybody wants a smoking gun. They want an ashtray that says made on Mars right on the back of it so that everybody can know this is actually Martian. It's not going to happen that way. Every one of the implants or every artifact you've ever gotten has gone through this sort of same route of debate. And ultimately, they all just go in service of the story that people tell us, supporting evidence, not vice versa.
Dr. Jacobs, should we start storing up dry goods, non-perishable food items? Should we buy more golden guns? Is the invasion imminent?
I got to admit, that thought has crossed my mind.
Well, you know, better safe than sorry. If I should, you know, put a bunker in my basement and fill it with a bunch of dried corn, maybe now is the time to do it. You're telling me that these guys are abducting humans left and right. You've interviewed hundreds of them.
Right.
And I could be next.
Well, actually, you won't be next, because what we find is that this is an intergenerational phenomenon. And unless your mother or your father was an abductee, and unless you began to be abducted when you were an infant, it's just not going to happen.
Dude, you haven't met my mom and dad. They're out of sight.
But the problem here is, if this is a takeover program, and that's a big if, obviously, but if I'm right, the question is, when's it going to happen? And And most abductees say that the aliens say, soon, it's going to happen soon. We're approaching the end of the program. It's going to come soon. And the interesting thing is that, number one, they don't know that other people are saying the same thing, and they don't know that this kind of a statement was not made years ago. Abductees weren't saying this years ago. And so the question is, well, what do you mean by soon? And now abductees just don't know. They say soon, or they don't clarify it. But in fact, I've been able to say that within the next few years, that early actually, up until, let's just say, the next 40 years, which I still think is much too early, something will happen within that period. Now, obviously, it's long enough so that, you know, maybe if I'm wrong, I'll never know it. But that all adds up to soon for me, and it's too soon for me. If this happens. However, I think we're really fairly past the point of being able to do anything about this. Of course, the scientific community considers the subject to be totally and completely illegitimate, and not a whole lot of people have put any talent or energy into the idea of how do we stop this, how do we protect ourselves, how can we slow it down. There's almost nothing like that going on. There's a few projects, but very, very little. And I think we're too far down the line with this. I mean, we've been involved with this for 100 years anyway, and these beings, if what I'm saying is correct, obviously, these beings have a tremendous amount of time and energy and sort of manpower or alien power, as the case may be, invested in this. And I just cannot think of a scenario whereby we would be able to seriously hinder their efforts.
No, because they got bigger guns than us, probably.
Or bigger antenna. I don't know what they got, but whatever it is bigger and better.
Dr. David Jacobs, you're with Temple University. Your book is called The Threat. You've interviewed hundreds of people who claim they've been abducted by these aliens. And we thank you for taking the time to talk to UFO Update on the Chris and Rob Show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We'll be in touch. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you later then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
As I said, this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. We're going to be, give him a jingle. We got some more guests lined up. This is UFO Update, and we're talking to people who are involved some which way or another with the UFO phenomenon, whether they're studying it or been a part of it, or in a little while we may talk to someone who's actually been abducted. That's on the schedule. I'm Chris Comer, and I'm here every week with my co-host, Rob. Tonight, I'm here with Terry Endress, and Terry is a member of the Anomaly Research Center. Did I say that right?
That's correct.
Is that how you pronounce anomaly?
You're doing
anomaly?
Very well with that. Anomaly, yeah, that's it.
You can get zebra anomalies, can't you?
I don't know. I think...
That's a zebra mussel. They got that problem in Lake
salt
Superior.
Water, isn't it? Saltwater, yeah.
We're talking about UFOs and alien abductions and the such. If you'd like to call in, 961-8900 is the call-in line tonight. That's 961-8900. This is WAIF in Cincinnati. And check this out. The Extraterrestrial Experiences Support Group is about sharing and coping in a confidential environment and is led by a professional counselor. That's right, they do have support groups for people who have been abducted by so-called aliens or whatever, which means that it must be much more commonplace than any of us think. We think it's just the movie of the week on NBC or it's the latest Hollywood blockbuster, but these things are taking place to somebody and more people than you thought. If you'd like more details about the Extraterrestrial Experiences Support Group, call 665-6737. That's 665-6737. We are now joined by a great American hero, and to me, a great American hero is someone who has done something that the rest of us either don't have the guts or the opportunity to do so. And in this case, we're going to talk to Dr. Story Musgrave. Hello, Dr. Musgrave.
Is that you, Chris?
That's me. How's it going?
It's going fantastic, man.
When was the last time you were on the space shuttle?
A little over a year ago.
And you don't fly anymore because did NASA retire you?
Well, they told me I'd had enough. They said they weren't going to fly me anymore. So that was that.
You were just getting too good at it, that's all.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and the younger up-and-coming astronauts, they just couldn't, you know, measure up to all the standards that had been set by Dr. Story Musgrave over the years. Am I right?
Of course.
Yeah, something like that. Well, thanks for being on tonight's program. As I told you when I contacted you about this, we're talking tonight about a little more than just your typical space shuttle mission. We want to talk to you about something you've probably been sworn to secrecy and will be killed if you talk about it, and that is the extraterrestrial connection. Do you believe that the Earth has been visited by anyone from another planet?
Well, to start with, I know there's billions of intelligent civilizations out there. There's billions of other places that have life. Some of them civilizations which have been around for millions of years, and they're hugely advanced doing interstellar travel, and all the way back down to life forms which are just single cellular. You know it's out there. It's a cosmic imperative. I have not found any evidence, however, that we have been visited here, you know, by interstellar travelers. I have no evidence that they've been here.
But if you did, you would probably be sworn to secrecy by now anyway.
No, I really don't think it's a conspiracy.
No, because NASA's not in the business of keeping secrets. NASA's in the business of discovering new information about the universe that God created, and your job is to tell us about it.
Absolutely, and I believe that anyone else, no matter what their belief system was, if they came forward with something like that, they would be totally protected by the public from anyone that was, trying to suppress that information. But for the people in the space business, clearly it's something they would love to have happen.
They'd all get rich.
Well, something like that.
Well, let me ask you something, one more thing about this supposed conspiracy theory. Even though you weren't involved with the Mars mission, I know that you did hope someday to maybe travel to Mars on one of the space programs. After all this hubbub had been started over the years about the supposed face on Mars, recently the Mars Observer took some more pictures of that location on the planet.
Yes.
And found this thing that it looked to me like a face. It probably looked to you like a face as well.
Yes.
And all the evidence had been collected by different researchers over the years saying that there was a city nearby, pyramids were nearby, all these other supposed artifacts on the planet Mars. When we took more pictures last month, we found nothing but a pile of rocks. Do you think that NASA was responsible to the demands of the people in requesting that those locations be photographed again?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the people, you know, that directed the satellite to take those photos, but I would expect they would be sensitive to the public, and if the public has an interest in a particular part of a planet, it would be very reasonable, you know, to take pictures of that.
Well, we're joined tonight not only by yourself, Dr. Story Musgrave of NASA and former space shuttle astronaut. We're also joined in the studio with Terry Endress. He's with Cincinnati's Anomaly Research Center, and he studies the unexplained UFOs, extraterrestrial abductions, and those sort of things that take place in the area.
Dr. Musgrave, what's it like to be weightless? I'm a child of the space age, and I'd love to know, is it like floating in a swimming pool, or is there something qualitatively much different?
It is different, but also it's similar. The three-dimensionality and the continuous motion which you get into in a swimming pool,
mm-hmm.
and the three-dimensionality of your position and ability to move around. We use swimming pools, of course, to train for doing spacewalks.
Right.
We put the right kind of weights on our spacesuit so that we can study reach, visibility, and geometry and choreograph a spacewalk. Zero-G is a marvelous, absolutely magical experience because we've been created and evolved here in a gravitational environment. It's part of our constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you launch in for 8.5 minutes and you find yourself up there does not mean that you do away with your gravity sensors,
right.
and your gravity beam. So it's a magical place.
I'll bet, because it's something, you know, watching the space program develop, and unfortunately it hasn't quite gone as far as
well. Dr. Musgrave, at what point do you think our society will be when we're able to send civilians into space for vacation type purposes, not just to go up there and do good science, but to go up there and enjoy weightlessness?
And
maybe with that special someone.
At the current rate, it's going to take a long time. I can't tell you when, but I can point out that in the 60s, we did Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and we're well on the way to our first space station in basically about 8 years. The current space station we've been working on for 14 years. Things go an awful lot slower. We don't have the same urgency. We don't have the kind of bottom-line performance responsibility that we had in the 60s.
That's true.
So it'll be a longer time, and I can't tell you when.
I was wondering if you could make a comment. We came across some information on the net that indicates that you had given a some type of presentation on astronomy, a slideshow, basically of purely down-to-earth stuff, but towards the end of your presentation, apparently, according to this report, you had a slide of one of these little gray aliens. And according to this report, again, and I quote, you simply stated, these guys are real, I guarantee it. What is the truth behind this report?
No, no, I did not. I have, I've taken pictures of what's probably a rubber seal. It's like a snake, it's like an eel out there, maybe a half an inch in diameter.
Okay.
I've taken videos and photos of that, and that, of course, provokes an interest. But no, I have never seen anything that had the signature of a spacecraft. You see ice chiplets which go off. You know, there's thousands of them, and they shatter, and they go off in different directions. And they turn their lights on and off as they rotate. There's an immense amount of phenomena. But I have heard every astronaut debriefing since before Apollo, and we have not seen the evidence yet. But I do think we really need to be open. Myself, I try to contact, I go that far in sort of a form of prayer, just to tell whoever is out there that I do acknowledge there are other beings out there, and I would love them to come get me. But I'm also I do that.
Yes.
See, I think it's part of humanity's growth that we accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me ask you something.
I'm also grounded, and I have no evidence that we've been visited.
Well, I saw you recently on the Fox Television Network on one of these programs called Sightings or something like it, and I'm sure that they edited your interview extensively, but you were talking about a snake-like object that would follow the space shuttle as you orbited.
That's the rubber seal. I think that's a rubber seal. It's about a half an inch in diameter. It has internal motion to it. I photographed that and I videoed that just so that NASA would know that right after engine cutoff, a few hours after that, that we were shedding a seal.
Well, you know, the television program Sightings wanted us to believe that you thought there were space snakes following your spaceship.
That's the way
due to that seal?
Yeah, that's what it sounded like.
Well, that's what they were talking about on that show. With they'd clip in and out of your interview and you talking about these snake-like objects, but on TV they didn't say anything about it being a seal.
Well, I can't tell exactly what it was. I never did find out what it was, but it had nothing, none of the signature of a spacecraft.
But is your duty to NASA and the fact that it did resemble something that might have come off of the spaceship that you were piloting or part of, that's the context in which this was reported, correct?
Yeah, I took videos. I took a photograph. It was marvelous to watch it. It kind of swam out there, you know? It was really, really fun to watch. And I couldn't tell the exact size because I didn't know the distance. You need to have either size or distance.
Right.
But I wanted them to know so they could look into to see if there was anything missing unusual. It happened on two flights, actually.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago that you'd been privy to all the astronaut debriefings over the years. And Neil Armstrong, who was the first man to walk on the moon, and by the way, he just lives right here in town and is within broadcast range, may even be tuned in tonight. There's a lot of rumors and conspiracy theories about him and why he doesn't do interviews or talk to the public anymore about it, and a lot of people say that he either saw something on the moon or he saw something while traveling there that may have been a UFO or extraterrestrial in nature. And the conspiracy theory even goes so far as to say that he said something about it on the Dick Cavett Show. I haven't seen a tape of that. Do you know anything about anything that Mr. Armstrong might have seen?
No, and of course I lived in the halls with him and I heard the Apollo 11 debrief, that's crew person, astronaut to astronaut, in which you have a responsibility to say everything what happened and your perspectives on it so the follow-on crews will know what's going on.
So we can lay that little myth to rest.
I would think so. Now I have heard, you know, like I said, every single debriefing, you know, for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And no one has seen anything that has the signature of a spacecraft, even though we're open to that, and we would just love that to happen.
Right.
Our minds are not closed to that. We would love to have it happen.
Yeah,
but
most of the...
We also have to stay grounded, and we don't think it has happened.
Yeah. Most of the photographs, I think, that some of the shows like Sightings and such have shown from the Apollo missions and stuff usually turn out to be nothing but glare on the cabin windows. that, when photographed, looked like some kind of anomalous glowing blob out there
in space.
And there
are thousands. There's thousands of pieces out there.
Correct.
The stuff that comes out of the bay, after engine cut off the amount of ice chip, but to go out and when they're at a distance, they're just like something with the lights turning on and off.
Yeah,
well, you know it's just ice that's drifted out, and ice fractures and goes in different directions.
Yeah, like John Glenn's fireflies.
Yeah, but very early on in the program, John and others had, you know, it was the first time up, and even little pieces of grease and other things, and of course, they did not expect to see all those things.
Right. Yeah, first time out, I guess it could be very, very interesting, huh?
It's a spectacular show, what goes on. And the first time out, when no one else is, you haven't had a chance to listen to anyone else report it, and you didn't expect it ahead of time.
Well,
Dr. Musgrave, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay.
This has been a real treat talking to you because it's, you know, sort of like a dream come true for me to talk to an astronaut, for crying out loud. And it's really good to hear that you have an open mind toward the possibility of extraterrestrial life out there. Not that, you know, they are necessarily contacting us, but you're open to that possibility.
It's a certainty.
Yeah.
So why won't Neil Armstrong do any interviews? Everyone in Cincinnati has approached him at one point or another.
All I can say is that that maybe he's just a very private person. I just think it's his basic constitution is all.
Well, on the outside chance that he's tuned in, he's welcome to call us at 961-8900, although he probably won't. And you can feel free to say hello to him if you'd like.
Okay.
Oh.
Hi, Neil.
Okay. You say life out there is for you a certainty. What kind of evidence do you point to?
Mostly coming from statistics on the hundreds of billions of stars and galaxies that have been around 20 billion years.
And
I'm
also
coming from the idea that if you have a planet the right distance from a sun rotating at the right rate, you know, with the right kind of elements from supernovas and that stuff, that complexity will arise because it's having second law of thermodynamics. It's getting energy from its sun. Complexity will arise, and life is part of that.
And so, also with the recent discoveries almost daily of what appear to be planetary objects around distant suns, that only tends to support that very idea.
And things like water and other things. The more we go out there, the more we find water, and the more similar the world out there is, the universe is out there to our own Earth.
So, and water is sort of a key to the whole thing, anyway, right? I mean, that's a crucial part of the equation for life, correct?
Yes, to support life. I think probably within our universe, I do believe in other universes as well, the carbon-to-carbon bond, I think, is what defines life. The fact carbon can hook to itself.
Right.
You can hypothesize silicon to silicon, but we've never been able to do that.
Right. But that allows for complexities in systems then, correct?
Yeah, carbon-to-carbon sure does.
That's wonderful.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us tonight, Dr. Story Musgrave. It's always a thrill to talk to a space shuttle astronaut and somebody that we consider a hero for going where no one else usually goes.
Thanks, Chris.
Although, it's a pleasure
to be in your program. It's a very thoughtful program.
Well, thanks. More and more people are going to outer space all the time, and there may come a day when most of us get to go up there.
I'll be in Cincinnati next week. I don't know if I'll get a chance to come by.
Oh, you will? I hadn't heard about that.
Phi Delta Theta is having its 150th anniversary, so I'll be talking to them on the morning of the 19th. But I don't know if I'll have a chance to run by and see her or not. If I can, I will.
I'm not a member of Phi Delta Theta, but I'm going to find out if I can become a member before this weekend. Thank you, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
We'll keep
been
in
a
touch.
Real treat.
I'll talk to you
Thanks.
Soon.
Thank you, sir.
This is UFO Update, presented by the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. It's 25 minutes after 11. We still have more to go. We're going to talk to an actual UFO abductee who has an implant in her. It might have been taken out by now. And some other things. We also have the engineers are out in the hallway right now working on another live link up with the Mir space station. So if we can jiggle a few, get the soldering iron out and solder a few cables together, we might be able to link up to the Mir space station. You know, they're about to dismantle that thing.
I know. Well, actually, it's going to free fall pretty soon.
Right. And the space shuttle is visiting the Mir space station right now on what they're billing as the last American visit to the Mir space station. So we'll see if we can hook up here in just a second.
This is Mike Wood, the chairman of the board of the Real Stepchild Radio of Cincinnati, WAIF-FM. And I'm proud to introduce you to the Mir space station where our engineers are right now tweaking the dials, trying to get the radio connection tight so you can listen to what the Mir astronauts have to say.
They're cosmonauts on the Mir space station.
Right, but I grew up in America, so they're astronauts to me.
Okay, I think our engineers are out in the hallway. I think they're twiddling some knobs. Okay, we got it.
Hey, we got it. Yeah, we got it. Oh, God, let's do it. We got to go. We got to do it. We got to.
Hello, my name is Boris Luzhogradskis, and I am the commander of the Mir space station.
And I am Vladimir Slavoj Dikolat, the co-pilot of the Mir station, and I know where the vodka is all the way on board.
Vladimir, this is a scientific mission. We are on aboard the space station Mir. So pour me another one of your famous vodka and powdered ice cream floats, and let's study the effect of weightlessness on another hammered cosmonaut.
And those crazy Americans wonder why everything is always broken aboard space station meeting. Looky, Boris, here comes the American space shuttle Columbia now. I wonder who could be coming to visit the space station Mir.
I don't know, Vladimir. Why don't you open the pod bay door and let them in?
Okie dokie, Boris.
Yeah, hey, hey,
hey, guys,
hey, turn off those bright lights.
Yeah, and why do you have all those TV cameras?
Yeah, why don't you get those cameras out of here, you stinky American pig boy?
Well, hey, boys, my name is David Cahill, and I'm the host and producer of the Fox television series Sightings, that explores the unknown phenomenon of unidentified flying objects. That's UFOs to you and me. So, boys, have you seen any unusual solar flares, or I mean flying saucers?
Hey,
lately?
Hey,
have you been abducted?
Hey.
Did they put any probes in you?
You really need to relax, comrade David Cahill.
Yeah, I watch your TV show whenever the orbit near SATCOM 1. Would you like a vodka and powdered ice cream float? It's absolutely yummy.
Well, I don't mind if I do, actually. That's pretty good. You're probably wondering why I came to the space station Mir in the first place. I wanted to ask you boys some sensitive questions about the truth about UFOs.
Okie dokie, comrade. You know, since the Soviet Union is no more, I can tell you all about our sensitive Russian secrets about the truth about UFOs. I don't have to worry about my poor grandmother, Didja Luzhogradskis, going to the gulag. And if I spill the rubles about the Russian space program secrets.
Would you like another very strong vodka and powdered ice cream float, comrade David Cahill?
I don't mind. That's pretty good. I don't mind if I do. You know, boy, this weird space station sure has a lot of pretty little blinking lights in it.
Hey, now watch it now, there, big boy buster guy. Don't you be touching anything, Mr. David Cahill. Boy, Vladimir, it is funny how the weightlessness on the vodka affect the proud Americans. Looky, Vladimir, Mr. David Cahill. He's passed out like a little girly baby boy.
Shall we take her down, Commander?
Ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. Fire the thrusters. If they are working, comrade, fire the thrusters.
There too, Commander.
Oh, how about that wheat field in Minnesota?
That alfalfa field in Albania looks pretty good too, Commander.
Okie dokie. That looks like a good place for a crop circle. Fire the crop circle laser, comrade.
Tune in next week to find out the truth about the mysterious cow mutilations.
That was fun, Vladimir. What do you want to do next?
Let's go back in time and build Stonehenge and the Great Pyramids in Egypt.
Oh, goody goody. Why about all of the dinosaurs too?
Yeah, that'll be fun. Then let's abduct Pamela Anderson and probe her all over.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Boy, I could sure use a cup of coffee. Is there a bathroom around here?
Looky, Vladimir. Our little guest girly baby man is waking up.
What's going on, guys? Did I miss anything?
Yeah, that's a good question. No, you did not miss anything. Neither did you, stupid American man. It's been very quiet. Nothing has happened.
Stay tuned for more on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show and UFO Update.
Star baby, star baby, star baby, uh-oh. I've been supersonic, 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 you know. You're so beautiful. You think you're from a UFO.
Aunt Betty's with Star Baby. She was abducted by a UFO. And we've been talking about UFOs and extraterrestrials and abductions and those sorts of things all night. My name's Chris Comer. I'm here every week with the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. And tonight we're doing the special edition of UFO Update. Terry Endress of the Anomaly Research Center is in the studio with me tonight.
How you doing, Chris?
I've been doing fine for the last hour and a half. How are you doing?
I'm just holding up just great.
It's been a pretty fascinating show so far. We've talked about alien abductions, and we're going to continue talking about abductions now with Gail Seymour. Hello, Gail.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. You're with the IRM. That stands for Implant Removal Method.
And that's what I call it. Mm-hmm.
I would assume at this point that that's an alien implant that somebody gets when they're abducted by a UFO.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, my background, in addition to being a business person, is that I used to teach healing and was director of a big nonprofit down in San Diego. And in the process of teaching body work and working with doctors, my work evolved into counseling and working with UFO abductees. I didn't mean for it to do that, but it was kind of a natural progression. So about 5 years ago, I put all my other work aside and focused on this because it was needed, and there aren't very many of us out there.
Is this a surgical technique you're speaking of?
No, I do this work basically over the telephone. It's almost like psychic healing. There are people who do surgically remove these implants. There aren't many of them.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking a little while ago about a fellow named Dr. Lear.
Yeah, I've talked to Dr. Lear. I actually asked him to do a research project with me, and he's the only person I know that is surgically removing these.
Now, when you go through your process, does the alleged abductee actually have the implant or whatever in his or her hand as hard evidence? Or
no,
or what?
And to tell you the truth, the reason I expanded the name of this service from implant removal method to implant removal and deactivation method is that I didn't have substantiation that it was actually removed. But I believe it's either removed or it's deactivated. Its magnetic properties are deactivated.
Now, does that also include the possibility that somebody doesn't even have an implant? I mean, is there a possibility that some of the folks that call you?
Anything's possible in this day and age, but a lot of these folks do go to doctors and have x-rays and have these things fall out of their nose and have bumps on their head and on their feet. And most of the people that call me have physical symptoms and strange marks in their bodies and wake up with bruises, and you know the rest because you've talked to these guys.
Right. Now, what is the most compelling case that you've come across?
Well, the lady that's going to be on the show tonight has a very long history of abduction. and she'll tell you her story. Most people that call me have had abductions from the time they were very, very young, and most of the time it runs in families, and they will remember a relative talking about this or keeping it a secret. But this young lady has had a great deal of trauma because as she told her mother about the situation, her mother took her to a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist proceeded to give her electroshock therapy. So you're looking at people who keep their mouth shut after a while because they get in deep trouble.
Yeah.
Well, before we talk to your client, and her name tonight is Anne, have you yourself had any experiences with UFOs or been abducted yourself?
If I told you I wasn't, it would just be that I don't recall it. Most people are hypnotized or otherwise made to forget their experiences. I do personally work with an ET group that people can see who are clairvoyant called the Arcturians, and a lot of us healers work with various groups that we have an affinity toward. So when I'm on TV, people say the stage lights up and it's blue. And when I work on people who are clairvoyant, that means they can see into the next dimension. They will describe these guys that I work with, and they all describe them the same way. So that's kind of an anomaly for me.
Well, earlier we were talking to Dr. David Jacobs, and he has recently released a book called The Threat. Are you familiar with the...
I sure am. I'm the one that recommended he be on the show because I think his books are so outstanding.
Well, do you agree with him about this threat to mankind, that the aliens have some sort of subverted agenda that may be harmful to the human race?
Yeah, it sounds pretty dark and awful, but I think these beings know that we're stupid enough to blow ourselves up, ruin our planet, ruin our rainforest, and nuke ourselves to death, and they figure we're going to kill ourselves eventually, and they'll come back and repopulate the planet.
So they'll just
maybe it's
in.
Already happened. Right? You never know.
Yeah, it's a sort of an urban renewal project on the planetary scale.
Well, Gail, let's talk to your client. Her name is Anne. Hello, Anne, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Now, according to Gail, you have repeated abduction events in your life?
Yes, as far as I can recall, started at age 6.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been up until recently. I'm already 49, and I think last year was the last time that I had an encounter.
And at what point did you decide to call Gail and seek some assistance in the matter?
Well, I had known Gail for a few years, and we happened to be talking on the phone, and I didn't know Gail did this, but I happened to mention to her some things that were going on in my life at that time. And she said, "You have all the symptoms of having another encounter or implant." And she did a session with me, and I had been having pain for a year in my foot, and I thought I had injured it, and I was just not able to get rid of it. After we did the session for the implant removal or demagnetization, the pain was gone. And just recently I had a similar thing happen in the other foot. We did another session and that was also relieved. It was instantly gone.
Well, Anne, let's start at the beginning of your story. You said you were first abducted when you were a child. Do you mind?
I think I was about 6.
And do you mind telling us as close as you can remember what happened and what happened once you got back?
Well, all I can remember is, now this is from a child's point of view, I thought that my grandfather was visiting me at night. I would be awakened telepathically. I would see a silhouette in the window that I thought was my grandfather. And he would ask me a lot of questions. This would only happen when I was away from home, when I was visiting my aunt. And he always seemed to know. And he would tell me not to wake the others, to come and open the front door. And I don't remember what happened after that. He just said, "Let me look at you." And this would happen repeatedly. And I believe that that's when it started.
Was there a UFO sighting that went along with this?
I have had several, yes, throughout the years.
And what have they looked like?
The ones that I have seen, the first one that I had seen was when I was a teenager that I can remember. I had gone out on a date, and the road that we had taken to come back home was not lit. There were no lampposts or anything. But from quite a ways off, we could see that there was something that was suspended over the road. And it was not moving. There was no sound. And there were lights that were coming right out from underneath it. And as we got up directly underneath it, it seemed to vanish and disappear into thin air. And we just kind of looked at each other, and my date said, you know, we're not telling anybody what we just saw. And that was my first recollection of seeing anything like that. It was a triangular shape.
Now, when you've been abducted, what sort of things took place? Where did you go, and did you encounter any alien-type creatures?
Now, I don't remember where we went. Everything that went on, I thought was occurring in my bedroom, because this would always happen at night, and it was always dark. But I have seen them actually put implants in my feet.
Now, do you have any idea what these implants were put in there for?
The feeling that I get is that it is a monitoring device. I really don't know much more than that it's to monitor.
So there was no intimation from these entities as to what their purpose was, what their motivation was, anything like that?
They've never told me, or I don't remember it, but I know that I have woken in the middle of the night with a lot of pain and felt drugged. I could see what they were doing, but I was helpless to do anything about it. I was like immobilized.
Now, as is the case in many of these instances, have you been given any kind of information from these entities that you feel is worthwhile to pass on, or is there any special message or special warning or anything like that that, as we've seen in The Threat and in other books written by ufologists, that there's some purpose for this abduction rather than just for abuse?
I have not been given any communication, and I have really not read any of the books. This is something that that you just don't talk about to other people because of the fear of stigma and ridicule. And I've gone through a lot with psychiatrists and being medicated and many other things because nobody wants to believe you.
Mm-hmm.
And so no, there was no message given to me.
Now, can you describe the entities at all, or are they still just sort of shrouded in darkness?
Well, they were just kind of shadowy.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of shadowy figures. They have not really revealed themselves to me. But I just refuse to live in fear anymore.
Gail, do you think that your work with Anne here has been successful so far?
The only way I know that the work is successful is that people tell me they have a physical symptom, and after the session, that symptom is no longer predominant. And mostly, it's pain, and she has had pain. So if a session is done and the pain's gone, then that's a success in my book.
That's the Hippocratic Oath.
But the real success comes when they call me and they tell me they're no longer being abducted.
Hmm.
And so, you know, that's my ultimate goal.
Do you have a hotline or a website you'd like to give out over the air in case somebody would like to contact you?
I sure do. If people would take this down, the website is put up by a lady who's also an abductee, and her website is www.abduct.com. That will get you into the master website called Alien Abduction Experience and Research. If you want to get to my sub-website within her master website, you add a slash to the right, irm.http, and that will get you directly to my section. Okay. He has a very interesting test that you can take that will let you know whether there's a high likelihood that you've been abducted.
What are a couple of the questions on the test? Not the whole test, but just an example of some of the questions that would be posed.
Wow.
I mean, what should I look for? When I go home tonight and the radio show's over and I'm kicking back in my big easy chair, getting ready to go to sleep for the night, what am I going to be thinking about?
Well, I hate to be jaded, but I'm not even sure I took this test because I have so many people that I talk to. But, you know, most of the people who think they've been abducted have serious health maladies. They can have nosebleeds, migraine headaches. They wake up with funny little red dots on their chest that looks like somebody's taken a skin sample because they do cloning. They wake up with pains in their joints, lumps under their skin and on their hair. They tend to have scoop marks from, again, skin samples under their eye. Bruising around the nose. Sometimes they put these implants in the tear ducts. They think they've had a bad dream and they've seen these beings in a dream and various kinds of surgical procedures in a dream. And they kind of dismiss it. But all the symptoms tend to follow a pattern because they all have recollections of various surgical procedures. One of the things that I ask women, especially of childbearing ages, did you ever go to the doctor, be diagnosed as pregnant, and then mysteriously were no longer pregnant? And a high percentage of them say yes. They go back to the doctor. The doctor says, well, gee whiz, you must have had a miscarriage. And they look at the doctor and say, come on, if I'd have had a miscarriage, don't you think I would have known? I mean, it's like the evaporating fetus, you know? So, these gals are aborted on board ship, and the fetus is taken and done and matured on board ship. And that's the purpose of this grand experiment, is to repopulate the Earth or planets beyond with these hybrid children. About 2 weeks ago, I got a call from a gal who found me on the Internet. She was very scared because they were taking her and her young son. And she said the being that came down, and this is new for me, the being that came down looked almost human, but not quite. And I had never heard that before from anyone. But again, if you read Dr. Jacobs' most recent book, The Threat, you will find that they have done enough hybridization and generations of hybridization with humans that these hybrids now look more human than not. And they're coming down being very gentle and nice and telling some pretty neat stories, and people are no longer quite so afraid, but they still are ETs.
Gail Seymour of the Implant Removal Method, thank you for taking the time to talk to UFO Update on the Chris and Rob Show tonight.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, Anne, for coming clean with your story and talking to the public about it.
Thank you.
Talk to you guys later. Bye-bye. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show with Terry Endress of the Anomaly Research Center. And myself, Chris Comer, will be here, it looks like 12 more minutes until midnight tonight, so stay tuned.
This is Science Report. Today, seeing planets. Trying to find life on other planets seems a monumental task, given that we can't even see planets outside of our solar system. Astronomer Roger Angel at the University of Arizona is working on a new telescope to search for extrasolar planets.
When you look at another star, you're trying to look for a planet which may be millions or billions of times fainter than the star and very close to it in the sky. So you need a trick that will somehow cancel out the light from the star and leave the light from the planet.
Angel's idea is to use four telescopes in a row. When two or more telescopes are used together, it's called an interferometer, and they're useful because a computer can combine the light coming in from the two telescopes to make an extremely accurate picture, or even reverse the light waves coming in from one telescope to cancel out the picture in the other one. Angel's interferometer would cancel all the light along a horizontal line down the middle, but not the light above and below that line. Then the telescope would slowly rotate so that the star sitting at the very middle will always be canceled out, while everything around the star will pop in and out.
We can detect objects as faint as we expect the Earth to be at the distance of the nearest stars.
For out-of-this-world accuracy, the telescope will need to be deployed somewhere far away from the bright light of the sun, probably around Jupiter. For Science Report, this is Karen Celia Fox. Science Report, a feature of the American Institute of Physics.
That was very informational, wasn't it?
It sure was. It really filled in that gap for me.
Yeah. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show UFO Update. And the reason we're calling it UFO Update is my co-host tonight, Terry Endress, used to be the host of a show called UFO Update.
That's correct. It was a cable access program that normally was seen on channels 7 and or 10.
And I take it you don't do that anymore?
No, we've kind of run out of the out-of-pocket funding that we were so dependent upon.
WAIF has situations like that. It's 10 minutes until 12, and we've been talking about UFOs, alien abductions, extraterrestrials all night long. And you know, I was pretty convinced until we talked to our last guy.
Yeah, that was a little less than convincing.
Are you starting to think that maybe most of these abduction cases are really cases of children being sexually abused, and instead of concocting in their brain the multiple personality disorder, they're concocting an alien abduction disorder?
I think it's very possible that a good number of them are people who have been abused either sexually or physically or psychologically, and rather than admitting that might have been a loved one who actually submitted them to these kinds of things, they come up with sort of this cover memory. Now, the only problem is that doesn't necessarily fit all the cases all the time, but I would say that a good number of these folks are just reacting to some kind of abuse from this world, not another.
Now, would you say that that might be the case in 100% of the cases, 50% of the cases, or maybe 99.5% of the cases?
Even if it's 99.5% of the cases, it's that 0.5% that's probably going to be worth looking at afterwards.
Yeah. We're wrapping things up here, but before we go, we want to talk to John Timmerman. Hello, John.
Good evening.
Let's turn you up. Let's try it again. Hello, John.
Yes, sir.
Much better. We're talking to you from Lima, Ohio, which is right up Highway 75.
Well, actually, you're talking to me from Lakeview, Ohio.
Oh, yeah? Where's that at?
Well, it's about 23 miles south and a little east on Indian Lake, if you've ever heard of the place.
And you are the head of the CUFOS, the CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies.
No, I'm not the head of it. I'm the treasurer, public relations officer, and several years ago I was the chairman of the board when Dr. Hynek was still living.
Well, trust me, if you're the treasurer, you're in charge. we're calling you tonight because Lima is not that far away.
No.
And we've been talking tonight about UFO cases that have taken place all over America and even all over the world. I want to talk to you tonight about UFO cases recently that have occurred in the Ohio Valley. Are you aware of any?
Well, I'm not as aware of them as I might be if I had been keeping track of the reports coming from Pete Davenport. Has Pete been on this evening?
Yeah, we talked to him for about a half an hour earlier in the program, and he told us about over Seattle, over the Bangor Naval Base. They have nuclear submarines, and they have UFO sightings there. Then a year and a half ago, there were UFO sightings in Arizona, and they were called the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah.
And other things like that.
Well, there have been a lot of cases all over many places. A number of years ago, I put together a large photo exhibit and took it to malls all over the United States, Canada, and various other places, Puerto Rico and the island of Guam, actually, for Dr. Hynek, and I had it on display in malls. And in the course of doing that, over a 12-year period, I contacted many people and several engagements in the state of Ohio that normally wouldn't have reported their experiences to anyone, except that they saw this exhibit, came over and looked at it, said, well, that's what I saw by looking at one of the pictures on the panel.
John Timmerman, can I interrupt for a moment?
Sure can.
The sound you're hearing is our emergency warning sounding.
Yes.
Hamilton County is currently under a severe thunderstorm warning. That's not a watch, that's a warning, which means lightning could be striking you. So if you're on a cellular phone, hang it up now. Severe thunderstorms over Hamilton County.
How about that?
Have any UFOs been reported in Hamilton County? I know that in the early 70s, somebody saw a UFO in Norwood, of all places. But he might have been drunk and eating White Castles.
Well, our son, Jim Timmerman, lives down in Norwood. And I don't think he was drunk, and I don't think he saw anything. But there are a lot of reports from throughout the state of Ohio.
Well, we've got Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, which isn't too far away.
Oh.
And I've always thought that if there were UFOs sighted anywhere between here and Hocking Hills, it might just be one of those jet fighters flying around. Maybe even some advanced technology of jet fighter that is top secret.
Well, we have to realize that a great majority, and perhaps 90 to 95%, if anyone ever had the way of making a statistical study of it, of the reports that people have been presenting to us apparently are misperceptions. Apparently seeing aircraft approaching at an angle that looks like they're hanging in the air, and then suddenly they go by rapidly and they think suddenly it started to move. Well, these are errors of perception, and they happen quite frequently. And there are many people see things for the first time, like the planet Venus. But it's amazing that beyond all these misperceptions and errors of viewing and recognition, there are some cases which are really unexplainable. We have quite a few of them throughout the state, and over the years I've collected quite a few.
Throughout the course of the evening, we've also been talking about alien abductions. What's your take on the alien abduction scenario?
Well, I'm not an expert on that subject. A long time ago, I was not very much interested in it because I thought it was just errors of judgment again in terms of mental aberration or people with dementia, various mental conditions, which are treatable, of course, and are common throughout society. But I'm not too sure that I was correct in that assumption. I'm beginning to believe that there's something interesting happening, but it's very, very difficult to make a distinction between those things which are clinically treatable and those which are a real event.
Absolutely.
In perception.
Is there any one case that you know of that you find more compelling than, say, another?
Well, I only had the privilege of working closely with one case, a woman in up in Mansfield a number of years ago, had what she claims to have been a series of events occurring over her lifetime. And without going into it carefully and with great detail, I'm not able to make a judgment except to say that it was a rather convincing experience. I had a gentleman from Cincinnati came up to with medical background and technology and some experience in regression, and he and others, the woman's husband and a friend from Lima, and I observed a regression, I guess you'd have to call it that, with this woman. And she was telling of things that had happened, she thought, in her childhood several times when she was less than 10 years old, and then again in her teens.
So you would basically say that it is worth looking into, even if it isn't probably the most impressive aspect of UFOs, correct?
Oh, we need to pay attention.
Sure.
We need to try to explain it, no matter what the cause may be.
Well,
and if it's not condition created by some alien life form, which many people believe it is, and I'm not so sure of that, but even if it isn't, but then we should be paying careful attention to what's going on in the minds of these people.
Well, John, thanks a lot for your time. I'm a little sorry that we didn't have more time to spend with you.
If I can get on again sometime, give
Absolutely.
Me a little more warning, and I'll play some tapes of interviews, which are very interesting.
That would be great. Okay, thanks a lot for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for taking the time with us. John Timmerman from Lima, Ohio, CUFOS, the Center for UFO Studies. If you're the treasurer, buy more T-shirts. You guys could use some more UFO T-shirts.
Well, on the other hand, if anyone wants a free mailing from me, Post Office Box 1621 in Lima, Ohio, 45802, and I'll be glad to send them some interesting material. Box 1621.
45802, Lima, Ohio. Thank you, John Timmerman. We're out of time. The Tuesday Night Jazz is here with Lee Harvey. Lee, have you ever been abducted by an alien?
No, I haven't.
He says he hasn't, but he's seen him before. He knows all about him.
Tell him to be careful.
Thanks,
Bye.
John.
Good night, boys.
I wish it wasn't so late. You know, we could go on with this UFO thing for hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
But now there's a severe thunderstorm going on. If you're if you got your windows open, close them. If you're on one of your cellular telephones, hang it up because lightning strikes that first. And if you're in a radio station underneath a radio transmitter, uh-oh.
Yeah,
that's us. Let's get the hell out of here.
This is Science Report. Today, the search for dark matter. Look up into the night sky and you can see millions of twinkling stars.
But scientists think that all those stars, in fact, anything that gives off light, make up no more than 10% of all the stuff in the universe. Filling the void around galaxies is an exotic material called dark matter, since it can't be seen. But dark matter can be felt. For example, if a hypothetical dark matter particle known as the WIMP, which stands for Weakly Interacting Massive Particle, bumped into the nucleus of another atom, it would send that nucleus flying. Physicist Daniel Snowden Ift, who searches for WIMPs at the University of California, deduced that mica, a common and very old mineral, would show traces of an eon's worth of WIMP collisions.
The mica is a billion years old, and over those billion years, WIMPs will have interacted within the mica, causing these recoils, causing these chemical changes, which are permanent.
The recoils from the WIMP collisions act a lot like two billiard balls smashing together on a pool table, except in this case, one of the balls is invisible.
So it would be like looking at a pool table with one billiard ball in the middle, and suddenly it shoots off to the side.
Indeed, that's how many WIMP detectors currently work. A physicist watches a crystal for suddenly shooting nuclei and checks to see if it was made by a WIMP. But mica should record the footprints left by many WIMP collisions throughout the ages. By examining the tracks of these nucleus recoils, Snowden Ift and his colleagues hope to put a limit on how large WIMPs are. Of course, all this depends on whether WIMPs really even exist, something which is yet to be proven. But work like Snowden Ift's should bring us a step closer to illuminating the mystery of what makes up dark matter. For Science Report, this is Karen Celia Fox. Science Report, a feature of the American Institute of Physics.